The title of this particular diatribe is America Without Americans. And the reason that I say this is that because of the present definition of America, there's no such thing as an American. I started writing about wordism some years back, and what I write tends to become the substance of a lot of cocktail party discussion in Washington. People don't admit it, but it's there. Wordism, of course, is the idea that one must be loyal to words and not to people. It's sort of the opposite of racism, and therefore holy. The idea is that if you are loyal to your kin or people who look like you, and you're white, then you are a traitor to the true ideals of our society. Well, as I said, I was writing about wordism for a couple of years, and then National Review, which is the William Buckley's magazine, used to be, which is the flagship of respectable conservatism, started talking about America as a propositional state. Actually, a propositional state came up in the with the usual delay between the time that I started talking about it and the time that writers decided they could use it. And a propositional state is what I mean by a wordist state. National Review started talking about America being a country based not on the population, but on, quote, ideals, unquote. In other words, a country based entirely on words, not on a people. Now, the Constitution of the United States starts with a definition of what America is and what America is for. It says, "We, the people of the United States of America, and our posterity." National Review has come to the conclusion that this is pure treason to what America really is. National Review pointed out that while Germany or France or England may be argued to be countries made up of Frenchmen or Germans or Englishmen, the United States is made up entirely of a set of ideas, i.e., a set of words. People like me, whose family has been here for almost exactly 400 years now, are permitted to reside inside the propositional state so long as we subscribe to the proposition. The propositions change, but the basic proposition, for example, that all men are created equal, or the proposition of freedom, or the proposition of love and brotherhood, or whatever it is the latest, whatever the latest proposition may be. As long as we, people like me, or the people of the United States of America, people who've been here, as long as we subscribe to these propositions, then we are granted the right to live here, just as those who immigrate here are granted the right to live here. And this shows the truth in the words undocumented workers. We don't refer to Mexicans who feel loyalty to other Hispanics and who come across our borders, that is to, sorry, I didn't, shouldn't have said our borders, the United States borders, they are not illegal aliens. They are workers to whom a bureaucrat has not yet granted a work permit. But, according to rulings of the United States Supreme Court, they have every right in this country that you do, every right in this country that I do. They are America. That is the way we actually look at the world. Not only liberals who use the term undocumented workers, but National Review, which is the official opposition to liberals, looks at the situation exactly the same way. If you believe that there is a people called the American people, then you are literally a traitor to America, which is a nation of principles, not of people. That is the one idea that what I call our twin establishment, but which other people call both sides in our political debate, are fully agreed on. America consists of a set of words, a set of principles, and loyalty is loyalty to those principles. There is no American people. Whenever a Muslim commits violence, and if that Muslim is a citizen of the United States, National Review refers to him as a traitor. But according to National Review's own definition, this man may be a lot of bad things. I happen to think that terrorists are bad things. But he is not a traitor. After all, he is being true to his proposition in a propositional state. Islam not only allows violence to make the state Muslim, that's the way Islam expanded in the first place, was by using violence to conquer countries and make them Muslim. Muhammad himself was a pretty good fighter and a strategist, and his first conversions were, that is to say, his first mass conversions, were by conquest. He seized Mecca. And you simply cannot read the Quran as a good Muslim and believe that the Quran somehow advocates the separation of church and state, or in this case, the separation of mosque and state. No, according to National Review, this Arab, or this, well, not all of them are Arabs by any means, this Muslim is doing precisely what a loyal American is supposed to do. He is loyal to his proposition, to his words, not to some people of the United States of America. I remember that the last game, I believe it was, of the World Series, had a salute to Hispanics. And an American citizen was leading the salute, and he said that he was greeting not only Hispanics inside the United States, but their brothers in Latin America. Now, if a white man said, I'm greeting not only white people in the United States, but our brothers in Europe, he would have been lynched on the spot. But this gentleman is making something very clear. He is saying, this particular Hispanic, that his brothers are not Americans. His brothers are his fellow Hispanics in other countries. The United States is incidental to the entire process, and the World Series put this on national television and made it official. It already is official. In California, the Democrats warned Republicans that if Republicans managed to get a referendum going to cut off benefits, education, welfare, and so forth, to undocumented workers, as they call them, then California's Hispanic vote would forever be alienated away from the Republican Party. And that's the way it turned out. To put this in plain English, the Hispanic voters in California have a choice between lifting the burden off of Americans, we the people of the United States of America, or siding with their brothers, those who have come across the American border, which again is incidental, their brothers. They have come across the American border. Nobody's given them a piece of paper yet. And so they have the full support and backing of their brother Hispanics in California. Well, this is not exactly wordism. This is actually kin, although you'd have to dig pretty far to find any real kinship between a Mexican and an Argentine. But the fact is, nobody accuses anybody of being disloyal because they favor somebody who comes in from abroad over we the people of the United States of America. So when National Review complains wildly about the so-called Muslim traitors, they themselves have already defined treason so that the last thing any Muslim who commits violence in this country, any citizen who is a Muslim who commits violence in this country because he sincerely believes he is helping the cause of Islam, this man is certainly not a traitor. Now let me explain to you who is in fact defined as a traitor by National Review. All of us who supported the Confederate flags in the South have been declared by National Review as traitors. George Will, the respectable conservative commentator, quoted an 1866 statement in which he said, "Us rebels ought to all be wiped out." Now, there's nothing as happy as a respectable conservative who is out-liberaling liberals, so National Review has been far more fanatically anti-Confederate than the usual liberal media have. But the problem that National Review runs into when they call an American citizen who is a Muslim who uses violence a traitor is that there are a lot of wordisms in the world, and if you declare that America is a propositional state, then you have to decide which proposition it is that one is supposed to be loyal to. There's nothing particularly difficult about being an American, a loyal American, if you're loyal to the people of the United States and their posterity. That's pretty straightforward. But one irony, most of my talks seem to consist of ironies, one irony is that while wordists are always saying, that is, say, Catholics or Protestants or Bible believers or Ayn Randian atheists or communists and liberals and conservatives, they're always saying that a Muslim or who is too loyal to the Arabs is being provincial or something. They call it tribalism. The fact is that there are a lot more kinds of universalism than there are of nationalism. So the one thing a wordist will always say is, I'm talking about a universal principle, and you're just talking about loyalty to a particular people. Well, the thing is, there are only so many particular peoples on the face of this planet. So let's say there are a couple of hundred actual peoples that could be called nations, meaning cultural, racial, identity units. Just how many forms of universalism are there? Well, there's at least a million. Every person who has his own interpretation of the Bible or the Koran or Karl Marx, and remember, they'll kill each other over this, or Ayn Rand, all of these people claim that their particular wordism is universal. In other words, all it takes to have a new universal wordism is for somebody to sit down and write one down and believe it. Then his wordism is not provincial, it's universal. He can't help it if the rest of the world doesn't accept it. So there are at least a million wordisms in the world, and the number grows every day. Which leaves someone who believes in wordism or in a propositional state in one hell of a position if he is going to declare that someone is a traitor. A traitor to what? His particular proposition? Well, that's what National Review is saying. The problem with wordism is that people can be loyal to pretty well anything they want to. At the World Series, I believe the last game, they started with a tribute to Hispanics. And the American citizen who was leading this tribute said that this tribute was not only to American Hispanics, but to their brothers in Latin America. And I suppose he meant Spain, too. Now, if a white man were to stand there and say, this is a tribute not only to American whites, but to our European brothers as well, he would have been lynched by all those who scream about free speech. We know that. In California, the Democrats declared that the Republicans were committing suicide when they, some of them, sponsored a referendum which would have cut off benefits to what they called illegal aliens and what is normally called undocumented workers. That is to say, Hispanics, the brothers of the Hispanics in California. Democrats said, look, they didn't put it in these words, of course, but they said, look, Hispanic voters have a choice of loyalties. They can either be loyal to their brothers in Latin America, or they can vote to relieve other people who happen to have been born in the United States of this heavy burden of welfare and public schooling and so forth that undocumented workers cause. And the Democrats said, these Hispanics are going to vote for their brothers, not for you. And they're never going to forgive you for picking on their brothers. And that is exactly what happened. The Hispanic vote moved solidly behind the Democrats because their loyalty was to their Hispanic brothers. Now, it takes a certain stretch of the imagination to think of a Mexican who is a Hispanic, as a blood brother to an Argentinian who is Hispanic, or to a Peruvian or Bolivian, I forget which, who's Indian, whose original language was Quechua, they still speak it, but who has learned Spanish. But the fact is that the brotherhood consists of people who speak Spanish. They use Spanish words. understand. So what we call Hispanic is really wordism and not some sort of kin. The National Review always denounces Hispanics who vote for their fellow Hispanics over American citizens because they say it's treason. But this is a sincere choice of the what Hispanics consider the proper proposition. They have no loyalty to we the people of the United States, and National Review has no loyalty to we the people of the United States. Like so many other things, this decision that America was a propositional state was decided in the War of 1861 to 1865. The milestone in the switchover from kin, or the kin idea, the idea that we, the people of the United States of America, and our posterity constitute the United States, and National Review's idea that whatever you happen to believe constitutes the United States, this switchover occurred at the Gettysburg Address. Abraham Lincoln said, 67 years ago, our fathers founded upon this continent a new nation, dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. The nation was a propositional state, and that is, in fact, in substitute for my term wordism, National Review, I assume, got its propositional state from Lincoln, whom they worship as any Southern. And Lincoln did say that America is not dedicated to the proposition which is in the Constitution itself, we the people of the United States and our posterity. The United States is dedicated to the Declaration of Independence, said Lincoln, which says all men are created equal, and anyone who does not believe that all men are created equal is not an American, no matter where you were born. Whereas someone born in India or Mexico or Somali, who comes to the United States and sincerely believes that all men are created equal, is an American. That's what National Review says. I repeat, that is precisely what they say. They don't like to be called out on it, and of course, National Review would never print anything that called them out on this point. National Review is able to dish it out, but it certainly can't take it. So National Review has said that a person who is a traitor has to be someone who is violating his idea of the right words. A Muslim who is fighting to make America Islamic and uses violence is most, as I say, he can be accused of a lot of things, but he certainly is not violating the words to which he is loyal. Islam was built on force. Islam was built on using force to make states Muslim, and a Muslim who does not use force to make countries Muslim could easily be accused of being a traitor. Not only a traitor to Islam, though, after all, I'm not a theologian of that religion, but from the outside, as National Review is, I could say that the Muslims who do not use violence against a non-Islamic state are traitors to the United States in the terms that National Review states it. That is to say, they have violated the words, and the words are all that count. The last part of this broadcast is going to be history, but a lot of people are not that interested in history, so let me summarize the points I'm going to make. We're talking about the propositional state, which Lincoln declared at Gettysburg, and which National Review stands by, versus the constitutional statement that America is we the people of the United States and our posterity. Now, in order to declare this propositional state, National Review has to go along with some very interesting propositions, one of which is that the law, the Constitution, is whatever the Supreme Court says the Constitution is. They say that the propositional state declared by Lincoln is factual. They have declared repeatedly that all men are created equal is the basis of America. And they have quoted Lincoln as the victor in the Civil War and the Supreme Court in this context. Now, the problem with this is that Lincoln and the Supreme Court were, of course, deadly enemies. But my point is that you cannot believe in a wordist or propositional state and be consistent. Well, this is the reason for that. In order to decide whether what proposition your propositional state is based on, you have to be absolutely loyal to some proposition. Some fixed proposition will make you an American. This is a very complicated thing because we also have freedom of speech in America, which means that you can declare whatever proposition you want to. So exactly when is someone a traitor because his proposition is wrong? Well, if you're going to explain the proposition that the propositional state is based on in a country which practices free speech, you're going to have to do an awful lot of gymnastics to do it. So I'm going to go through some of those gymnastics, and if my historical explanation bores you cross-eyed, turn it off. Nobody's paying you to listen to this thing. According to National Review, the first people who betrayed America, who were traitors, were the people who wrote all men are created equal, because nobody, if you look at their later writings, particularly Jefferson's, nobody who is not actually institutionalized believes that all men in any way are equal. Jefferson made fun of that idea later on. So the founding fathers were the first traitors. All those people, that is the ones that National Review would call the founding fathers, the people who wrote the Declaration of Independence, were the first traitors because they really didn't believe any of that. The Declaration of Independence was written in the middle of a war. Objective statements are not written in the middle of a war. In fact, the Declaration of Independence was written in a city that would soon be occupied by the enemy. If you know any history, you will realize that the Americans, in writing the Declaration, were appealing to two groups of people. Their supporters abroad. One group was the Whig membership in the House of Commons in the British Parliament. That's why they blamed everything on the king. Now, all these people knew British law. They knew that the king couldn't do anything without Parliament. Any of the things that they listed that the king had done could not have been done without the support of Parliament. Not just the consent, but the support. And so the Declaration of Independence really doesn't make any sense at all in a logical progression because the parliamentary majority had to support the king and all of the things that the Declaration of Independence declares him guilty of. But the reason that the declaration was aimed at the king and not at the parliament was because it was the parliament on which Americans were depending for their salvation. And in the end, in 1781, even after the Battle of Yorktown, the king wanted to continue the war, but the parliament simply refused. Another source of support Americans were looking to when they wrote the Declaration in the middle of a war, and I really have trouble emphasizing how important it is that they were in the middle of a war, something that nobody on National Review staff has ever mentioned. In the war, they desperately needed French support. Specifically, they needed French support from the followers of Voltaire and Rousseau, the liberals inside the French government. They had a lot of say, these French liberals, inside the government of Louis XVI, and they believed Rousseau and Voltaire and statements like all men are created equal. And that is the group at whom this rather ridiculous statement was aimed. I think if you had walked up to one of the people who voted for, or certainly who wrote, the Declaration of Independence and said that they believed all men were created equal, they would probably try to have you committed somewhere nice. They were nice people, so they'd probably want to put you somewhere nice rather than the average madhouse. I have noticed that this little talk has gone on for 32 minutes, so the history that I was going to recite to you to show how confused people who believe in a propositional America or who believe in wordism get, just how confused they get between blind obedience to the Supreme Court or blind obedience to Lincoln, or what, after all, wordism is and propositionalism is blind obedience. I was going to demonstrate how confused that gets, but since we've already passed 30 minutes now, I think I will have the mercy to delay my discussion of that subject. I may even call it boring you sick, to the next Untrained Eye. This is Bob Whitaker. The program is Untrained Eye, and I look forward to boring you sick next time.